This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Now, to show our gratitude, we're not going to be like the other guys and jerk you around and bullshit you. We're going to tell you the truth.
Shane Douglas is the man who ignites the new flame of the sport of professional wrestling. The era of the franchise. The era of the ECW.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to the Extreme Three-Way Dance, the most wild menage a trois violence you'll experience across the internet. I am JT, joining me as always, Johnny and Jennifer. How are you guys doing tonight?
I'm high on life. How about you?
I'm flying high. How are you, Johnny?
Hey, Happy New Year. Happy New Year.
All right, good to talk to you all. Johnny, I saw you last week. Feels like forever ago, but...
That was last year, man.
That's true. Well, I can't believe it's already been a year since.
It was at the sweatpants convention.
Yes, sweatpants convention at Chuck E. Cheese, which is not probably the place to go. We did it anyway, because we're extreme. Until we roll.
Hardcore.
And hopefully next week we get to see each other for the first time in 2020.
Yeah, and then I cannot believe it's almost time for that game already. So. All right, if you're new to the show, welcome. Here on the Extreme Three-Way Dance, we're reliving the history of ECW television and special events, and eventually, hopefully, pay-per-view. We start in February 1994, the night the line was crossed, and we have motivated our way into mid-August. Last episode, we looked at Hardcore Heaven, and this week we kick off with the August 16th, 1994 episode of Hardcore TV. We start with clips of the opening moments of Cactus Jack versus Terry Funk from Hardcore Heaven. Then we get our opening animation and head inside the Eagle's Nest where Joey Styles talks up Hardcore Heaven. We get some photo stills from the main event. And then we get the full clip of the finish with the chair pile-on. So that's just kind of how we get started. Pretty basic stuff. Public Enemies backstage. Rocco Rock runs down all the shit they've done to Terry Funk. They caused trouble and hurt everybody. Funk stepped over the line and they always went to the park and came home no matter how far into the wrong town they went. This isn't wrestling no more. It's not about competition or money. This time Public Enemy wants Funk's blood. Funk found another goofy moron partner that's a fool. They've done a lot to get their belts and get out of the neighborhood. Funk made the biggest mistake of his career. He says Funk is no homie. He wouldn't last 5 minutes on the streets. And when they step in the ring on August 27th, Funk's blood will be on their hands because they're more afraid of living than dying. I thought Rocco Rock was absolutely in the zone for this promo. He was tremendous. And he sold as a blood feud. And it almost makes you forgive that Hardcore Heaven finish where they interfered and fucked up the match because of how good this was, Jenny.
Yeah, it was intense. Like, usually they're pretty silly, kind of carefree, but Johnny was filling it with that bloody bandage duct taped to his fucking face, holding the mic for Rocco. Yeah, this is fun stuff. I'm excited for it.
What did you think, John?
Yeah, they took it to another level. It was awesome intensity. It wasn't just the goofy type promo. Mm-hmm. But we should have kept track. That's about he slipped in about 90s hip hop lyrics. So he's like this and like that and la di da di. We like the party. We should have kept track of them being there about how many references they dropped.
I know,
and
I am
how many
regretting
songs.
It because it's like
songs.
Every problem. Yeah. Well, if someone wants to go back to February for us and watch all the ones up to August and write them all down, and then I know a certain Brit that would probably do it. So Ben, get on
probably
that. Yeah, and then we'll pick up from here and keep track. All right. Elsewhere backstage, Terry Funk and Cactus Jack. Funk's laughing up Public Enemy's philosophy. Says all they do is talk. They don't do. Funk hopes they do what they say and allows Jack to attack from the other side. Funk talks about his cousin Thornton from Indiana who went to Vietnam and lost both legs. Public Enemy talking about neighborhoods doesn't mean anything because everyone deals with tough stuff, including him and Cactus. They do what they love best, and that's wrestle. Funk felt like he was going into the Olympics at Hardcore Heaven 94 and greatly respects Cactus Jack for coming up through the ranks. This is a division they love the most, ECW. They won't walk out with any less than the tag team titles, and he won't ask for chairs again. Jack says Public Enemy never referred to him by name, and maybe they don't care about him, but he introduces himself anyway. He spent most of his life snoozing away at the Ritz and not in the streets. He shows off his busted eye, and that was from Terry, someone that liked him. So imagine what Public Enemy may do. Cactus says the streets will be homeless. And this is fine, but coming after that Public Enemy promo, this felt a little flat. I almost kind of wish maybe this was first. Funk was rambling a bit. He kept losing track and kind of stumbling over his words. The Thornton stuff didn't really end up going anywhere. I kind of get what he was going for, but he doesn't really get that across. So I do wish maybe this was first because the Public Enemy wanted to saute them, Johnny.
Yeah, Terry was very laid back in this one. Mm-hmm. It wasn't really intense at all. And then Cactus brought a little at the end saying how the streets would be homeless.
Well, I don't know. Terry Funk with that white towel over his head. He looks like a homie, right?
True.
No. He was kind of old man Funk, you know, just You're some right. sort of rambling story about his cousin in Vietnam.
Born like, in Indiana.
And Cactus, bless his heart, just, you know, very intensely listening to him and acting like this means anything, but add a little flavor to the end. But mm-hmm. yeah, definitely pales in comparison to Public Enemy.
We get a graphic plugging the huge NWA World Title Tournament happening on August 27th. We run down the guys who are entered in, and next week we'll get those full brackets to determine the new NWA World Champion. We'll see what happens from there. Joey Styles in the Eagle's Nest says ECW has been selected to host that tournament by the NWA, and it will happen inside the ECW arena. The NWA has been without a champion for quite some time due to political reasons, but that will come to an end on the 27th when we name a brand new NWA World Heavyweight Champion. I wanted to just really check, John. Do you remember who was a champion before they ended up vacant? Was it the Rude stuff? With like the real gold belt and all that crap? Was that what broke the lineage before they had a name one here? Do you know?
I'm not 100% sure.
Let's look quick. Yeah, Flair won it at Beach Blast and Barry Windham. And then it got vacated when the WCW pulled out of the NWA in September. They continued to recognize Flair as champion, then they ended up stripping him. So the title's been vacant since September 15th, 93, when they basically denounced Ric Flair as NWA champion. And then WCW changed his belt to the International World Heavyweight title belt, of course, that whole fiasco. So this title's been vacated nearly a year, and the title tournament will happen inside the ECW arena, where I'm sure things will go according to plan.
Wonder why they chose ECW for this tournament.
I think they were their biggest territory and the hottest one at this point. They had the TV deal. They had name guys in like a Shane Douglas and Terry Funk and these other guys on the show. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it was some politicking done. Obviously, we'll find out why ECW pushed for it. But I think they were chosen. I don't know. Let me see if I can pull up exactly why they were chosen. Title been vacant by several months. NWA board member Dennis Corluzzo proposed holding a tournament to crown a new champion. Todd Gordon and Paul Heyman, the owner and bookers of ECW, wrote to the board of directors proposing they host the tournament given they had the most television exposure than any other affiliate, and the board accepted their proposal. So a little chicanery by Gordon and Heyman, who in the past had issues with Dennis Corluzzo. So we'll talk about that soon, but I think that's why they were chosen. I think they lobbied, and I think it was all about the TV at that point for them.
That makes sense.
We get a highlight video for Too Cold Scorpio focusing on his upcoming match with Sabu. Scorpio is the top seed. I'm sorry, past match with Sabu. Scorpio is the top seed in the tournament. He's backstage. He puts over ECW and hypes the tournament with a very generic, basic promo. We then, in full, get the Mikey Whipwreck Jason match from Hardcore Heaven with all the aftermath, including the quick Jimmy Snuka and Taz versus Pitbulls match as well. So we're not going to go over that all again. Talked about it in our last episode, but they show the whole match in full here. So one of the few downfalls that we actually get to see the big shows is that we got to live through the recap episodes that come.
It's true.
But these are gold for the ones we don't get to see, at least. So,
But at least we're sure of the finish because there was a little bit of question the way they cut it up. Mm-hmm. We wasn't sure if the title really changed hands, but now we're 100% sure.
Right, they solidify it. And Joey really concerns it because he's with Jason backstage. He makes Joey put him over, brags about being the champion. Jason talks about how other promoters never took advantage of him, but all his aspirations have paid off. Joey says without the pit bulls, Mikey would have won, but Jason shrugs that off and says he never knew it could be this easy. Chad Austin comes in, pours champagne, and then runs away. Jason says Joey is anxious and jealous, and then talks about how beautiful he is, and walks off singing Mi Sharia Moore. Joey then begs all wrestlers to eliminate Jason. This is a really fun segment, John.
Yes, I love my Sharia Moore. and an irate Joey saying, yeah, I'll offer him money for you to beat him. Just out of control.
It hurt my feelings to watch Mikey get beat again, and I don't like the belt on Jason, so he can go fuck himself.
No?
Next.
Oh, jeez. Mm-hmm. So you don't feel as seductive about the title as he does?
I do not, no. It was more seductive when it was Mike.
He is a great, he's great stuff, though, Jason. He's so good. I mean, do you still not like it from a booking perspective, or just because Jason's so good at his role?
It's because he's so good at his role.
I know. He's amazing.
Good heel heat. Good heel heat.
He's a perfect choice for this right now. I mean, he had to be the one to end Mikey's reign, honestly. I think they did it pretty well. All right. Paul's backstage says ECW wants to go worldwide, and that's why the NWA World Title Tournament is being brought to the ECW Arena. He's mad at hell of all the whores who have prostituted wrestling into a circus with clowns. He won't take it anymore. Not one man can represent wrestling. There isn't one true bona fide man left to carry the NWA torch. There isn't one guy to point to and say, he's a man, not a clown or a circus performer. He's mad as hell, and he won't take it anymore. And on August 27th, he'll call 911 to do something about it. Jenny, what did you think of Paul here?
It was fun. Fired up, you mm-hmm. know? That's what I like to see. You know, I like his more cerebral promos, like we'll see one later. But I like it when he's fucking just pissed off, and it's mesmerizing. And I liked when he said freaking whores reminded me of John.
Yes, I could relate being mad at hell at these freaking whores.
That's your legacy, John. Whenever we hear the word whores, we can all think of you. That's what you've become.
Who is?
All right, Shane Douglas and Mr. Hughes are backstage. Douglas is out to prove the whole wrestling world he is what he says he is, the greatest athlete in wrestling today. It doesn't matter who's in Hollywood and who can kiss Ted Turner's ass. It's about who's the greatest athlete in the sport today. He has another stepping stone and knows the stories of the great NWA champions until Ted Turner squashed the NWA to create a family-friendly product. Take shots at Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, and Dusty Rhodes. Douglas is the franchise and an athlete. He calls out Dick Flair yet again. In 1994, says he's now the man, and if Flair wants to prove it, he can come up here and get in the tournament. If he doesn't like what Douglas is saying, Douglas will even give him the top seed. He'll work his way up from the bottom. On August 27th, he'll prove he's the man. He calls Flair a coward. He says when he wins the NWA title, he's going to go to Flair's backyard as a shoot and challenge him because he hates his guts and thinks he's a chicken shit. This is a really good promo to close the show and hype the tournament. Douglas is really locked in right now. I mean, he's just on fire. He's feeling himself hard. I think he really takes it seriously that he views himself as like the top dog of ECW, representing himself across the world. And ECW is where everyone should come to prove themselves. And he's believable in that, putting that across. Whether he truly believes it or not, he's great at getting that across. So you get the feeling that this is right now, in 1994, the epicenter of the wrestling world. And if you want to prove yourself, you got to compete Shane Douglas in Philadelphia. And I think that's a wonderful way to do it in this still kind of territory days. It makes everyone emboldened, the fans of ECW emboldened behind him, saying, yeah, that's our guy. Fuck the rest of you. All you guys are pussies to come here. And what they keep doing by bringing in these guys to challenge him from around only furthers that, right? Because they're getting guys that actually will accept the deal to come in. And it's pushing more that other guys are afraid of him and that he's the dominant force. So I think the whole thing, the way that Shane comports himself, is really impressive. And I think it's brilliantly done across the board with his promos and his wrestling. No one's ever going to confuse him for an elite wrestler, but he is more than good enough to carry the torch that he's presenting in front of us. Jenny, or John, sorry, go.
Dick Flair, it just shows he was helped, but that there was no limits. That at the time he broke all everything taboo and mentioning names you're not supposed to mention, other federations, but without those limits, that's how he was able to get it over.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of have like a pet peeve with like the name dropping shit. I
Yeah.
mean, he does it really well, and I understand your point, Justin, but it still just makes me go, I don't know. I mean, it's a great promo, and he's intense, and he makes sense. All of it makes sense. It's just my personal thing. I'm just like, I don't know. It looks like you're a little bratty child, like wanting attention, you know, Ric Flair, and like, as a shoot, I'm gonna kick your ass. It's like, come on, you know? I don't know.
Going Shania on him, huh?
I
I don't know. I feel like we have this argument or debate
We
quite
did,
often on the show,
yeah.
but I'm all right with it. I'm still okay with it because it's so unique to this time period. Like John saying, they were taking those chains off that other promotions weren't. And we'll see it eventually in WCW, right? I mean, on Nitro, that's how they really kick off the war. I mean, Chad and I have been chronicling that on Warzone. you know, just how much they were landing shots. And I think it just works in this setting because they're such an underdog and what they're trying to do is just build this loyalty. So he's name dropping because he's trying to, he's putting himself over, but he's also putting ECW and its fans over by saying, this is like, come here, you know, come prove, you think you're the best? No, I'm the best. Come prove it. This is my home. You can't beat me in Philly. I don't know. I just think it brings the fan base together at this time. What they were trying to do is really build this unique atmosphere.
It does make sense. I don't know. Something about it just
No,
wigs
I
me
mean,
out.
I think at times there'll be times in the future with others, you know, either ECW, WCW, wherever, do it, and it feels like cringy. I don't get that feel here. How do you feel, John? Do you get cringy with this stuff, or do you think it's effective?
Nah, it's very effective. And yeah, like you said, later on, like stuff like when Bishop challenges Vince, that stuff is it's garbage. But this is more realistic.
He'll impress me later, don't worry.
Okay. All right. So that wraps up the show. I only did Stock Rising, the only awards I gave to this one. There was no match. I mean, there was one we already saw, and no moment, no 90, like none of that stuff really in this one. I guess it could have been some 90 stuff. I didn't really note it. Did you guys have anything you called out?
The only thing I noticed was Paul Heyman's tie, which looked like it had ghosts or like cum stains all over it. I couldn't really tell
Quite the
where the
spectrum
aesthetic
right there.
was there.
Just the police hat.
Either ghosts or come. All right.
Yeah.
So for I had Stock Rising. I had Rocco Rock in particular because Grunge didn't really do much in that promo. It was mainly Rocco Rock, Jason, who I thought was great, and then Douglas.
The Public Enemy, definitely.
Public Enemy, yeah.
All right, that was on mute. I didn't have any falling. Did you guys note anyone?
Not really on this episode, but no.
All right, final grade. I just went with a simple 5 out of 10. I mean, it's hard. I feel like it's almost unfair for us to judge this episode because it probably would have meant a lot more to us if we didn't get to see Hardcore Heaven, and we're gonna get that soon. Like with ones we don't get to see, we're going to appreciate a show like this where we get to see all the matches. Actually, in another one coming up tonight, we're going to get that. So I think this value in this show, for us in particular, having seen Hardcore Heaven, it was kind of a ho-hum. Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah, for sure. I went 4 out of 10.
John?
Yeah, 4.5.
Okay.
Just to recap, but it does give him a chance to get the table spot in about 3 more times.
That's true. You can tell they were feeling proud
Yeah,
of that
that
one.
is awesome to watch.
Milk that for all it's worth.
Hell yeah.
But to your point too, it gave him a chance to like hammer stuff home, like the title swap with Jason, right? That we were a little confused about coming out of Hardcore
Oh
Heaven.
yeah,
So they can kind
definitely.
of reiterate some things here.
Definitely.
All right, let's move on to our second episode of the three we're talking about tonight then. August 23rd, 1994, we open with stills from Hardcore Heaven of Sandman versus Tommy Dreamer. Then we get a live clip of Woman waking up Sandman with a cigarette to close out that segment. We then go backstage where Sandman's with Woman. Woman is not happy that Tommy kissed her again. She thinks he's kissing peaches at Sandman's house with Tommy Cairo. That gets Sandman fired up and says now he's going to deal with this because of Tommy. He gave Tommy too many options, and now he has to listen to this. Tommy has too much time on his hands, and Woman will keep bitching until Sandman ends it. So more of this like the Sandman is mad at these guys because he's going to deal with women being a cunt, basically, because they're pissing her off. Tommy, now I got to deal with this.
Yeah, this was fucking hilarious. I love woman in this one because she's just like, look, I'm going to keep bitching until this is done. Like,
until you kill, until you kill
it's
him,
wonderful.
We're gonna deal with this shit.
She says, Dreamer kissed her twice.
Mm-hmm. And then she paints the picture of Dreamer, Cairo, and Peaches, which, God, nobody wants to see that unholy threesome.
Yeah, I thought we were done with Peaches, and they're still mentioning her.
Oh, no, she's not gone. There's more Peaches to come.
Oh, Lord.
We're going to be shaking that tree. At a late night messaging. Phone calls on the 1-800 sex lines that were around. Did you guys, Johnny, you must have called one of those things in the 90s, right? Yeah?
Yeah.
Now, was it a plan thing, or were you like watching TV at 1 in the morning and like they had the ad and you were like, oh, that sounds good?
I think I was just one of the ads in the old Village Voice or something.
Really?
They were so prevalent. I mean, I know you're not that much younger than us, Johnny. I don't know if you remember the proliferation of those things. I mean, they were ads were endless for the. They still exist, actually. If you are watching the right channels late at night, you'll still see the ads for the sex lines. But they were huge in the 90s.
Did you ever call one, Jess?
Prank call. We prank called. Not that there was like a free one, or there was one where you get like a free 2 minutes or something. It was like a local one, and we would call and fuck with them and then hang up. But I was like just a little too young to really do it, you know, when they were like at their hottest. Anyway, that's what they're doing, I bet. Joey's in the nest. He hyped up the NWA title tournament, crowning a new champion in just 4 days. ECW has been selected to host. We have more info to come, but we do get the brackets right now. So here are the 8 guys in this tournament. Shane Douglas versus Taz. Dean Malenko versus Nishimura. Too Cool Scorpio versus Chris Benoit. And 911 versus a wild card. The wild card is replacing Terry Funk, who dropped out to wrestle in the tag match that we're also going to get on that night. What do you guys... So, you know, we talked about last episode, ECW, why they were chosen to host a tournament. But I was surprised that it was all ECW competitors. So, like, that they didn't bring in other NWA talent. So, it's like, not only did they host, it's basically like an ECW title tournament. I guess they brought in Nishimura... Mm-hmm. Malenko and Benoit, but Malenko and Benoit end up staying around. Like, they become ECW guys from this. So really, Nishimura is the only import from outside ECW at this point. So I found that a little surprising.
Maybe they couldn't get anybody else, you know, to come to ECW.
But at this time, it looked like Benoit and Malenko were like outsiders. So we didn't know they were staying.
True. So I guess if you're looking at it in this moment, you have at least three, you know, new guys plus the wild card. So, yeah, I guess so. I just thought maybe they would have brought in one of their, I don't know what big names are floating around the NWA. Dan Severn, I guess, was one of them. I mean, he would win the title soon. I don't know if he was actually in the NWA yet at this point, but Chris Candido and others were floating around. But anyway, so it's an ECW top-heavy tournament. Dean Malenko introduces himself, talks up his career resume. He's contacted 6 weeks ago by ECW. He accepted the invitation for the most prestigious tournament ever held. Talks about all the great NWA champions of the past and says he's been training. He hypes up all the talent involved. Says he will walk away champion. It's his chance to fulfill a dream and will give it his all. He rambles a bit more, talks about Rocky in Philadelphia and closes things out. It was a very, Johnny, a very Dean Malenko program, I thought.
Yeah. Low energy, low personality. But he did bring up Rocky. So.
Textbook Malenko, Jenny.
Very boring. Yeah. Like, what are we doing? Nope. And where is he standing? Like, where's this wall? Like, it looks like an office building somewhere. I don't know.
Maybe it was Scranton Business Park.
That's what I was going to say. It looks like fucking Scranton from The Office.
Nope.
This is Michael Scott version of a promo.
Michael Scott paper company.
You see Daryl walk by. That song can only mean one thing. It is time for the Pitbulls as they take on Tazmaniac in a handicap match. Joey talks about Taz getting the torch from Jimmy Snuka. We see clips of a recent incident where Taz's mystery partner didn't show for a match with the Pitbulls. The Pitbulls double team and beat down Taz viciously. We then get Austin and Rebel blocking the aisle, but Mr. Hughes shows up and now he cleans out anyone that comes at him as Joey thinks Jason has paid for Hughes' services tonight. 911 then shows up, and him and Hughes go at it as 911 pushes through him and sets the choke slam Rebel and Austin on the floor, but Hughes takes him out with a chair and just keeps bashing him with it. The Pitbulls keep abusing Taz in the ring as Jason pays off Hughes at ringside. They really really focus on that. Paulie comes out, but Jason just kicks him down. Sabu then shows up. He helps Taz clean house on the Pitbulls in a great moment, which the crowd loved. Taz belly-to-bellies Pitbull 2 over the top, and then Sabu springboards over him as the Frankensteiner to the floor. Taz then takes down Pitbull 1 and wins the match. It's a fun brawl. It was a hot segment. The chaos was really well done. Lots of brawling. The atmosphere was all fired up and wild. And a good blow-off at the end with Sabu showing up as a surprise to help Tasmaniac eliminate the Pitbull. So, Jenny, I went 2.5 on this. I dug the whole package that they put together.
I went 2 on it. I liked it. I like Mr. Hughes standing in the way, just like murdering guys that try to come out. That's different. I've not seen that. So, but the Pit Bulls are the Pit Bulls. And here's another team up with Taz that I'm kind of not buying. Kind of like Jimmy Snuka. Like, okay. We're doing this too. It just, I don't know. It makes him look like he always needs some guy to come out there and team up with him when he's pretty badass himself. So not as impressed as you.
Yeah, but it's only the numbers game when he needs the help. Like, he never needs help when he's on his own. This is like 3, 4, 5 on one. Anyone can't stand up to that. So. But they always make it too, like, he's not getting saved. Like, Sabu's not coming to save him, right? Sabu's coming out because he hates everyone who's out there. He's just coming out to beat the shit out of him. Like, he's not helping Taz, right? He's just out there
Paulie. Because they team up.
No, but it's more to help Paulie. I mean, you know, he's just out there. He's not coming to save Taz. He's not looking at, oh, Taz is getting beaten up. His manager just got wiped out. He's pissed off.
I like the twist that they added, having like Hughes and Rebel and Austin block everybody, because it made Sabu more special that he was able to be the only one to break through to help Taz.
To help Taz, yes.
To help themselves as
mm-hmm.
and Taz gets helped by accident.
Sabu is you know, supposed to be like this wild thing. Like, what does
he care? He's helping his manager. Paul gets
what
knocked out.
What does he care about?
Because that's his
Paul?
Boy. Paul and 911 are his boys. He's not that insane. He knows that those are his homeboys. He's there to help him.
Do they or do they not, like, cart him out on a thing? Anyway, it doesn't matter.
For his own safety.
Yeah.
Not because they're trying to control him.
Sure.
Oh, you are harsh tonight.
Yeah.
Should have joined John on the balcony. All right. We see the brackets again for Saturday. Scorpio's in the back. He pumps up the NWA title tournament. He's on the prowl. He talks about all the competitors, puts over Chris Benoit, says he'll win the title. Usual Scorpio stuff. He's not the most impressive promo out there.
Mm-hmm.
He tries, but not that great. Good hype, though, for Saturday, I thought. Any comments from either of you on this one?
My note said, like, is this the same promo?
It seemed like it.
Like, kind of was almost exactly the same. He switched it up a little bit, but yeah, he's a little generic when it comes to this.
There's a lot of times where I go to start to write and then I stop because I'm thinking that it's a replay of a promo, and then it's slightly different. I'm like, fuck, now I gotta watch it
again. I did the exact same thing. Yes. Get better. Too cold.
Johnny.
Nothing noteworthy.
All right, we get the whole 911 Mr. Hughes match from Hardcore Heaven in full, and then Paulie's in the back talking about the history of the NWA. How they want to have the third world championship alongside WWF and WCW to compete with them. After a year of backstabbing and politics, they're coming together to unify and declare a new champion with 8 men vying. Paul runs through all 8 guys, talks about their different motivations. He admits he wants to control the NWA champion, and that's why Sabu is in the tournament. Also, Public Enemy will battle Cactus Jack and Terry Funk. Paul hypes that too, says Funk hates Public Enemy so much that he pulled out of this tournament for a title that he last held in 1976. He doesn't like the shape wrestling is in, so he called out the Messiah of wrestling to bring us a savior, and that'll be 911. So lots going on here. Usually Paul, you know, ties up all the loose ends, puts over the Funk Cactus Public Enemy match, as well as 911 and Sabu, and hypes up everyone in the tournament. So this was really, really well done. John, I like this promo.
Yeah, everything except for 911 in the tournament.
Okay. Well, that has nothing to do with the promo.
Yes, so. Fucking agreed.
The promo was great, of course.
This is the one that I was mentioning that's more calm, cerebral, laying things out for us. Not as emotionally charged as some of his other ones. So yeah, I liked it a lot. I really like all these sides to Paul Heyman. It's very got a lot of depth to him when it comes to his promos.
A lot of depth. Not as much depth as he has these days, but a lot of depth.
Yeah.
All right, Shane Douglas and Mr. Hughes are backstage. Shane talks about he's waited for this all his life. He talks about growing up learning about the legends. This tournament couldn't have been held in Atlanta or Steroid Land. Steroid gets beeped by the WWE Network. Mm-hmm. Only in ECW Arena. He says people starting in the bottom ranked Hollywood shows claimed starring in bottom ranked Hollywood shows claimed to be a champion. Of course, that's a shot at Thunder in Paradise and Hulk Hogan. He isn't a champion just because some corporation says so. He's the greatest today. It's not Hogan. It's not Rhodes. It's not Flair. And on August 27th, he'll have to be dead before he leaves that arena without the championship. He'll step up to become the next champion. He's not an entertainer, just a franchise. He promises that when he wins, he'll give Mr. Hughes more cheerleaders than he's ever had before. You think they're talking about cheerleaders in Philly, Johnny?
Oh, yeah. I know Mr. Hughes hit that spot. I think that's where he found Angel.
Hughes says he doesn't need woman or money. He only wants Shane to win the title. Shane tells Hughes that 911's in the tournament, and Hughes says 911 has no business in wrestling. I guess he agrees with you guys. He'll go down next time. Douglas has to bet the bank and the house on him. Excellent promo yet again from the franchise. I thought Shane was fantastic here, Jenny.
Yeah, this was a step up, I think. It's kind of a little bit more the same, but I liked it more. He actually does a pretty good Dusty Rhodes impression, so I was kind of happy to see that. But he's amping up to something that will be epic.
Yeah, Shane's on fire. Just one better after the other.
Cactus Jack's backstage tells a story about his first WCW pay-per-view, 1990, a terrible match with Norman the Lunatic. He was at a Motel 6 after, got invited to Ric Flair's birthday party, thanks to Kevin Sullivan. He talked to Terry Funk that night, and a former WCW employer came up to them and said Funk likes Cactus because he sees some of himself in Jack, but Terry said he didn't see shit in him, and then he gave him a wink. Cactus hypes up the big tag match on Saturday, a match that brings a conclusion to a match that everyone wanted to see. Jack says Funk does moonsaults at age 50, and he hopes he can just get out of a wheelchair at that age. Jack has been living a corporate nightmare the last 4 months. He hasn't been pleasant to be around as a result, and his aggression has built up. Public Enemy will suffer because of it. Jack wants his revenge and the titles. John, what'd you think of this promo?
I love how with all the madness, he still emphasizes that he's coming for their titles. Mm-hmm. To get the titles over, along with the revenge.
Any promo that references a Ric Flair party at the Motel 6 is going to catch my ear. I kind of enjoyed that. And he compares Terry Funk to Jesus, which I thought was interesting. So, more weirdness from Cactus Jack.
I guess it's just the beard, yeah.
Yeah. He says nobody can tell a parable like Terry except Jesus or some shit like that. Like, he told a parable earlier. It was boring as shit, so.
Well, maybe Jesus was a little boring.
I don't think so.
You don't think Terry has a stigmata? That's why he thought of. All right. We get the brackets again. You know, we get stills from Funk versus Cactus and videos of the chair toss. One more time. Public Enemy's in the back. They say Saturday they'll defend their titles yet again. This won't be a wrestling match or a movie. They mock Funk, calling him a coward. They call Cactus Jack homeless. It says he's the type of guy that sleeps on a bench, craps himself, and drinks cheap wine. He ain't no hoodie. Public Enemy also has the finest of everything, even if it's all stolen. They'll make Funk bleed and take out Cactus as well. I thought it was a really solid, hard sell for their match at the tournament.
Yeah, kind of more goofier, like kind of more what they do than the intense one we saw earlier, but I still liked it a lot.
Yeah, especially the part where they say Public Enemy has the finest women, and
if they pay for like Johnny on the phone, and
Cactus is the homeless guy that craps in his pants, urinates himself, and complains about it.
Sleeping on Scott's couch. The Johnny on the couch, is that like Maddie in the house?
Johnny on the phone.
Johnny on the phone. Johnny on the phone. Spending $6.99 a minute. Talk to you. All right. Let's give our awards. Only one match. I gave it the best match nod, and that was Taz versus the Pitbulls.
Yep.
Yep.
And nothing for worst match. I identified a few best moments. The 911 Hugh showdown. Sabu helping Taz indirectly by coming out to help Paulie dangerously. And then Scorpio in his promo said the place to be, which always perks my ears up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like the Public Enemy promo when they called Funky Yellow Billy Sapsucker.
I liked Woman and her just straight up honestness. I'm going to keep bitching about this, so do something about it.
Tommy, I got to deal with this now. Most 90s, I had Rockin' Rebels mullet and tank top combo, and Scorpio's promo was incredibly 90s. That's everything you were saying.
I had Dean Malenko's boring-ass red t-shirt.
That was the 90s, boring red t-shirts?
Yeah, like it just looked like a sexual harassment video from the 90s or something. Like, ugh.
Incredibly specific, John.
It is. Yes,
Scorpio.
All right. Stock rising. I had Woman, Taz and Sabu, Jason and Shane Douglas.
Jason?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Was he not on this? I guess he was. Was he?
Nah.
I had him written down. I just write him down every time.
You just write Jason on all of yours. That's fucked up.
Sabu, yeah.
Sabu, Woman, Cactus Jack, I think.
All right. Stock falling. I hated to do it, but I gave it to my boys, the Pitbulls.
Mm-hmm. Dean Malenko.
Oh, poor Malenko. What did he do? He cut like a 90-second promo. No.
It was like 7 minutes at least.
Rough.
It was boring.
Rough. All right, final grade. I thought this was a fine episode. Again, a lot of hype for the tournament, which I cannot blame them at all for doing. And we had the really fun segment in there with some good promo. So I went 6 out of 10.
5 out of 10.
Yeah, split the difference, 5.5.
All right. All right, well, we're going to take a break. When we return, we have one episode left, but it is a dandy. It is a historic episode. It is an iconic episode. It is probably the linchpin ECW TV episode, or at least one of, ever. So we're going to cover that when we get back.
El Dandy. I've been.
Consideration paid for by the following.
Place to be Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop Feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these current shows, plus archives of our previous podcasts over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using www.placetobenation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And be sure to join us at our forum at Bigelow34.proboards.com for all sorts of wrestling, sports, and pop culture discussion each and every day, where you can make your voice heard. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
My friend's got a girlfriend, man, he hates that bitch. He tells me every day. He says, man, I really gotta lose my chick in the worst kind of way. She sits on her ass.
Johnny, I gotta deal with her now on this show. This is what you've done to me. Welcome back to the Extreme Three-Way Dance, episode number 14. JT, John, and Jenny here. Talk about first what's going on in the world of PlayStation.com and our podcast feeds. On this very feed, the PTBN Wrestling feed, we had a special Place to Be Network special. Scott Criscolo, Kelly Nelson, and Jacob Williams live watched the Primetime Wrestling Ultimate Challenge special from March 26, 1990, and that was a hype piece for our WrestleMania 6 Vintage Vault, which comes to you a week from tonight. Mr. D'Amato, you'll be in the house in the Sky Dome for that one with us. You excited?
Can't wait.
It's going to be a fun one. It's going to be a fun one indeed. No Holds Barred is back as well. That's me. That's Aaron. We gave a full reveal of our GWWE TV pay-per-view match ever project list. So we went through all 100 matches of each of ours. It is a haul, but I thought it came pretty good. You guys get to listen to that yet?
I have not.
I looked at the runtime. I think it's neck and neck with the Irishman. So we're going to have to break it up into a few parts. So.
Better actor in this one, though. No Holds Barred. On episode 31, row one, seat one, Ben Zanny and host Dylan Hale, guest Dylan Hales, count down their top 10 indie wrestlers of 2019. And in episode 3 of With This Ring, hosts Ryan and Cindy discuss matches that have more famous rematches at WrestleMania. On episode 2 of the Special Relations podcast, Callum, Ben, and Rory discuss their GWWE ballots, favorite Christmas songs, and briefly touch on December to Remember 2006. I believe it's December to Dismember, isn't it? November to Remember.
Sure.
Jenny and the Gems. Jenny, you're back. You, Sousa, Criscolo, and Drew, looking at the all-time classic WCW All-Nighter from 1995, which I believe was in Mike Tenay's bedroom or something like that. Or is it Tony's bedroom? Whose bedroom
it was in? It was in the Motel 6.
Oh, where Ric Flair's birthday was going on.
Yes, exactly. In 1995.
Lots to love on the wrestling feed. Also lots to love on the pop feed. Get tremendous shows. Weekly. Very often. Hard Traveling Fanboys. The Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular. Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular. They just did a great Star Wars recap over there. The Year in Pop. Laughing Theater, DC4U, Marvel Age, the Brother Sister Rewatch podcast, which dropped today with a great episode featuring the dinner party at Jan and Michael's, which is an all-time classic. One of the best.
She took me by the hand. Made me understand.
Fucking Hunter. What a great episode that is.
Jan's boobs in that episode are epic.
I still haven't.
I think that was the if you rank the best that's what she said, so that would be number one.
I still haven't stopped laughing all these years later at Michael with the tiny TV. Is like still one of my favorite bits.
Yep.
He splurged and got a plasma flat screen.
That poor fucking son of a bitch.
I could just stand here for hours.
While you're at it, you can subscribe to our co-host Jennifer's feed, the Jenny position. New home of Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, Telling Stories, and MCU Journey Through Infinity that features me, you, Tim, and Scott going through the history of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I hear there's rumors that Iron Man 2 is coming soon.
That's what I hear. Yeah, we'll see.
I told Scott my personal goal. Did I tell you? Did I talk about this on the show?
I don't think so. We haven't had a show in a bit. So.
Okay. Well, my personal goal is to finish through, what's Infinity War? Is that the last one?
Endgame.
That's what I meant. Endgame, the last one, before Black Widow comes out. Because I want to watch that. I want to see that in the theater.
I think you could do it.
Okay. I'm not saying our podcast has to be caught up, but I want to be through watching them.
Your personal watching, yes.
I want to be able to go to the theater and see that. I saw the preview, the trailer for Star Wars. I got excited. I'm like, I know who this is now. I'm not completely lost. Like, I know who Black Widow is. That's the thing. On our social media pages, the greatest sitcom of all time tournament is underway. We're in round one, kind of near the end of round one. Four matches per day, Facebook and Twitter. You can search greatest sitcom of all, PTBN greatest sitcom of all time tournament, and like the page there. You can vote each and every day. Jenny, what four matchups did we have earlier this afternoon?
Today, we are in the Dunder Mifflin region in round one with number four, 30 Rock, versus number 68, Fresh Off the Boat. 30 Rock is an all-timer for me, so that was easy.
Easy vote. Fresh Off the Boat's doing all right, though.
It's a good show. I like that show.
I think people just 30 Rock's one of those shows that I don't think everyone has watched. You know what I mean? Like, if you watched it, I can't imagine not loving it. So
yeah, it's a hidden gem, I think.
John, you agree?
Oh, yeah, 30 Rock.
number 29, the League versus number 36, Last Man Standing. Never seen the League. I've always heard good things about it. Also, I cannot stand Last Man Standing. So that was also an easy vote.
Okay. The League is awesome. It's worth a binge, Jenny. You don't even need, like, I've had people ask me, like, oh, I'm not into football or fan, but you don't need to be. Right, John? I mean, it's just like it's a hilarious show without that's almost just a backdrop, especially once you get into like season two and three, especially by that point, it's really like in the background. Season one's the only one where maybe it's kind of front and center, but after that, it's just about their lives. It's really less and less about football.
Such a great cast, dude.
It's really well done. Last Man Standing, I actually have some tie, a tie to. My friend, I got my friend, Chrissy. She actually did some writing for PlayStation.com way back in the day, probably 4 years ago now, 5 years ago. Her brother works on Last Man Standing. So it's been in my consciousness because I've seen her like post about it and stuff. So the roller coaster of it getting canceled and then picked back up and all this shit. Mm-hmm. But I know it's some people like it of a certain ilk. All right, what's next, Jenny?
Right. Number 20, Community versus number 45, Hope and Faith.
Is that the Kelly Ripa one?
I think so. I didn't look it up, but yeah, I think so. I loved Community when it was on. It's very weird, like a really weird, quirky little show, and it's sort of low-key great, but it's doing well.
I haven't. So I'm usually on the ball with these shows. I have not seen Community. I saw, like, I want to say we watched the first few. And then got sidetracked and I just never got back to it. So eventually, it's on my list. All the people I trust have liked it. Andrew Reich, I think, talked about it every hour on the hour for like 5 years. So, people who I know have watched it and really like it that I trust. So I'm going to watch it at some point. Johnny, were you a Community person?
Yes, I was.
Okay. And you liked it?
Oh, I loved it. A short run. It lasted just enough time.
Mm-hmm. All right, finally, number 13, The Goldbergs versus number 54, The Boondocks. Have not watched either one of these, but I know that The Goldbergs is real popular, so basically I just chose it for that reason.
And The Goldbergs is really good. I can't say I've kept up with it. I'm probably early last season I faded off, but it's a little more of a time thing versus like the actual show. I think it's a brilliant show. It actually speaks to me like very loudly. There's a lot of Adam Goldberg and JT. So I actually hated it for a minute because I was jealous of what he did because I felt like, you know, a lot of it's what I did and could have been me. It's a really good show. I think Jeff Garlin is great in the show, and actually the whole cast is just really, really good. They nail it more often than not. And it's not only really funny, there's also great messages like all throughout it. And if you don't watch it, if you grew up in the 80s and watch it and don't get nostalgic in any way, I'm not sure, then I feel bad where your life may have been. But it just definitely speaks to anyone, I think, who really grew up and was, you know, in the 8 to 15 range in the 80s or so. Like, it's very, just everything they do is dead on. Like, they really nailed the nostalgia of the 80s.
Yes, love the Goldbergs.
Are you current on it, Johnny? You watch it still?
Yeah.
Didn't they just do a
WrestleMania episode?
WrestleMania, yeah. How was that?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
All right, very good. Well, there you have it. Each and every day you can vote in polls just like that on our social media. We've also kicked off our 2020 stretch project determining the greatest WCW match ever. You have all year to do the research, promote your matches, and build your list. Conversation of rules at facebook.com/GWCW matches or at the Pro Wrestling Only message board at ProWrestlingOnly.com. We're already, like, the excitement is off the chain for this one already. Tons of comments and conversation going on right now on Facebook around matches being thrown out there and discussed, videos being posted. We're going to have lots of content. We'll get some cool folks on board to be doing some podcasts and some audio and written stuff as well. So I think there's going to be a good participation for this one. It's also a project that was started a while ago back at the Death Valley Driver message board that never was completed. So I think it's been hanging out there for a lot of folks for years that'll look forward to submitting a list. So this will be going all through 2020. You'll hear us talking about it, but I'm really excited for this one.
Me too. I will be so excited to submit a ballot with the King of the Road match as number one.
I'll be looking forward to discarding that ballot.
How dare you?
Check out PlayStation.com each and every day. New voices, fresh takes, bring you articles on topics in the world of wrestling, sports, pop culture, including Trent's SmackDown and Fox Report, The Week in WWE by John Crow, Paulie's Perspective, Jason's DVD Deep Dive, and Ben's Unpopular Opinion. And don't forget about veteran columns like Glenn Butler's weekly Walker on the Web. If you do an online shopping over at Amazon.com, click on the Amazon banner on the right-hand side, PlayStation homepage, or go to PlayStation.com/Amazon. Takes you right there and helps out PTBN with zero cost to y'all. All right, with all that in the books, why don't we go ahead and move on to our final episode we're covering tonight, and it is a big one. August 30th, 1994. We are recapping what went down on August 27th, and that was the NWA World Title Tournament. And we waste no time getting into our opening match. Tears were flowing from a very particular clown on this night as Doink the Clown is stumbling around the ring because he is the wild card participant in this tournament. 9-1-1.
Why?
It goes somewhere. It does go somewhere. I'm sure at the time, people watching this are probably like, what the fuck is going on? Why is Doink the fucking clown here? As this big wild card. 9-1-1 and Paulie are hyping up in the corner, and Joey promises us we are watching the right channel. He says, this is ECW, but the clown's in the wrong place. Doink is the wild card tourney entrant. He gets booed wildly as Joey says he took a wrong turn on the interstate, heading up to Stanford. Paul shouts directions at 9-1-1. The crowd chants, kill the clown. Joey puts over Doink's mat wrestling as Doink chuckles and acts a fool. Doink dodges a blow, but 9-1-1 grabs him and murders him with a choke slam as Joey says, where's Dink now? He takes more shots as Joey says Doink doesn't belong here. He won't be objective at all in this match. 9-1-1 hits another choke slam. Joey says he should go be a clown in Connecticut instead. I think that goes for a lot of people. 9-1-1 hits a third and covers for the win to advance. Paul says this is ECW, not a circus. Joey says one clown down and McMahon and Bischoff still to go. Fun squash in moment because Joey was just fucking on fire destroying Doink as he gets murdered by 9-1-1, and the crowd loved it. They all ate it up. I want to start a half just for the spectacle. And if you're going to take a shot and do something goofy, this is the way to do it. And it's such a statement because not only is it putting over 9-1-1, but also it is taking a piss on the WWF and the circus atmosphere. So this is their way to assert their dominance as a wrestling promotion by having Doink get destroyed by what they proclaim as a real wrestler. So I enjoyed this whole opening bit. I thought it was a strong way to kick the tournament off and a fun way to do it, Jenny.
Well, okay, so I've never seen Doink before. Like, I've heard that, but I've never seen him before.
You've never seen Doink?
I've never seen him.
Come on.
I swear I haven't. Why do you think I do this shit? So I can learn things. So anyway, yeah, I get everything that you were saying about. It's more symbolic, really, than anything else, just so they can have 9-1-1 choke slam.
Well, in the moment, it's symbolic. There is something to it. It's going somewhere. But in the moment, it's symbolic, yes.
I went half a star on it. So I did enjoy the creep factor of the clown, though. I will say that. And he had little playing cards on his ass cheeks. Yes, so that was fun.
It's a crazy game of poker.
Poker in the rear.
I was going to get it dirty.
Sorry.
Oh, boy. It's a full house right there.
It is.
You wish.
But I love the 11 clown jokes that Joey hit. With Paulie has dealt with enough clowns in his career, and one clown down and Bischoff and McMahon remain. Yeah. Joey had a dozen of them.
So did you like the usage of Doink or no?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Yeah. Crazy game of poker. Joey looks to be what's a Sears photo studio in the back. I wasn't sure where he was, but he talks about the big NWA title tournament plus other matches on the docket here tonight. We get a video recap of the full Sandman Tommy Dreamer feud, and that includes Steals from Hardcore Heaven 1994, and then we head back to the ring.
Awkward silence.
Yes.
Bring me.
Whore. This is a Singapore cane match in this past weekend.
What? How dare you? A Singapore cane match again.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Tommy! Joey says no other promotion would air a match like this. Sam and a woman are great as always as they come out. Dreamer's focused. Charges in. Get going right away. Dreamer's on fire. Hits a spin heel kick. Crotches Sandman into the post. A fan holds up a chair. Tommy throws Sandman into it. Then hits him with another chair. After a break, Tommy's still battering Sandman. Hits a DDT. But Sandman thumbs the ref by accident. Woman comes in. Tommy baits in Sandman but ends up running into a cane shot from Woman. Sandman hits a DDT. The ref turns around for the count and the win. Nothing match here. Silly ending. Either have no rules or have rules. Like, stop with the ref bumps to hide. Either we're doing DQs or not doing DQs, or either extreme or not extreme. Right now, that is one of the few things that really bothers me in ECW is the blurring of those lines. Like, when are we supposed to suspend belief that anything goes? And what are the lines to having? Why are we having ref bumps when there's no rules? So, like, stuff like that is bugging me a little bit. Todd Gordon comes out with a bunch of wrestlers and he calls for the match to restart, but Tommy turns it down, says it's ECW. He'll take the caning like a man. Tommy takes off his suspenders and bends over, but Woman offers a bargain. If he kneels and bows to her, he won't get lashed, but Tommy says no. So he bends over and Sandman bashes him 10 times with the cane as Woman keeps offering him to kiss her feet and he keeps saying no. Then he busts out the thank you, sir, may I have another. Tommy's back is all swelled up and bloody and he gets in Sandman's face and talks shit. The crowd gets really behind Tommy. Joey's backing him up as a tough son of a bitch. And then Sandman drills him with an extra shot, lights up a cigarette, and heads out. Really big moment for Tommy Dreamer's evolution and gaining credibility with the fans. A lot of gross welts across his back. The match is nothing, but this is all about the moment. And Tommy really taking that next step in his evolution of being, you know, an extreme legend. Not a pretty boy with the suspenders, but going out there and able to take a beating like this and still stand up. Not back down. So I want to start for the match, but the moment is really what it's all about, John.
Yeah, this is one of the iconic ECW moments that they're going to play the shit out of forever. And it really turns Joey into a made man. The crowd just stays behind him ever since this. And like I said, it's just one of those moments that it goes down in their history.
I went a star and a half on it because I just counted all of that, you know, post-match stuff in with it. So so I got to ask you guys, would you guys have taken the caning or would you have bowed and kissed the feet of Woman?
I'm not taking no caning. Fuck that.
Right? I was like, why? You know? Come on, Tommy. What about you, John?
No, I would have had to refuse a woman's feet.
Really? Not into the feet?
Nah.
You rather take the caning? You can't suck it up for a minute? All right.
As Joey said, we there's a certain justice system. This isn't Long Island.
Is that what they do on Long Island?
That's a Joey's. He had more shots at Long Island than Peter Winston.
That last brutal caning to the fucking back of a Dreamer's head was awesome.
Yeah, he crushed him with that one.
Yeah, like he really did.
And this feud is really still just heating up again. So, like, there's a lot to come with these guys. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
so.
Joey said that man's a pig.
All right, Joey sets up the tournament finals for us. We get clips of how every man advanced, and that included the arrival of Matt Bourne to attack 911, and we find out that Shane Douglas had been playing Doink during this segment as they helped get 911 eliminated in a fun bit where he came out, then Matt Bourne came out. And we should backtrack a little bit. So Matt Bourne is the man who originally portrayed Doink in the WWF. He was a wrestler for a long time, territory, worked in the WWF in the 80s, mainly out of Portland where he was a star. And he had played Doink from his debut in late 1992. All through the run of the heel Doink character. So the schizophrenic, you know, sadistic clown Doink, which he was very, very good at playing. He's also a very good wrestler. In September, he ends up leaving the WWF in September 93. They end up turfing him. I think he was kind of drugs and other issues going on. So he's out. They fill the Doink role with Ray Apollo and a couple others that would also play the role. Doink would turn face and become very antiseptic and just kind of a goofy character and lose all the bite that it had as a heel. I don't know what Bourne was doing in between this. I don't think it was too much. But he does resurface here now for a run in ECW and pretty much obviously carrying the Doink gimmick with him in one way or another, as we'll see. So he, let's see. September 13th, Doink poured a pail of water on Bobby Heenan, marking a fan favorite turn. On a December episode of Raw, Doink was given a present from Santa Claus with Dink. However, shortly after, so I guess he actually lasts a little bit longer, Osborne was fired for reoccurring drug abuses. His final appearance of that era was December 27th of Raw. Osborne was cited in a shoot interview that Bam and Bigelow did not like putting him over. He subsequently led Bigelow to snitching on him for smoking weed in the hallway of his hotel and getting him fired. So there you go. Doink would later be played by Ray Apollo. So that's that. Johnny, any thoughts on Matt Bourne?
Not really. Just the little match. They're still protecting 9-1-1. That's the only way they got him to lose a match.
Oh, yeah. They weren't going to have him lose clean, and he wasn't going to win the title. Yeah. So they had to find a way out. All right. Joey sets up sets up the tourney finals, and we head to the ring for our final match of the tournament. That is Shane Douglas versus Too Cold Scorpio to determine who will be the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. I thought this is a perfect finals. You get Douglas, he's the ECW kingpin right now, and Scorpio is a very accredited star with believability, a hot name coming off a WCW run, kind of a underground favorite. So this is a really good choice of, if you look at the guys in the tournament. If you weren't going to put Sabu in here, I think these were the next best two. We start with some feeling out, trading off a mat work, easing into the action. Scorpio gets a near fall, leads to a restart. As Joey says, this is a classic style that will epitomize the NWA. He runs off some famous former great champions. We continue easing in with more trading of basic strikes until Scorpio hits a nice spot where he drives Douglas's head back to the mat with his knee. Scorpio keeps going for covers in here where he can. We get a flurry of near falls by both guys. We reset once more. Scorpio blocks a superplex, gets a high cross body for a near fall. Scorpio grabs a chin lock, but Shane fights through and takes over, going to a seated chin lock. Scorpio battles to his feet, hits an electric chair, then gets two on a slingshot splash. Things go outside where Scorpio shoots Douglas into the railing, goes to the crowd. Scorpio hammers away out there, back inside. He tries a suplex, but Shane blocks it and hot shots Scorpio on the railing, which was a good spot. Douglas suplexes Scorp in for two. Joey says it continues to put over the NWA title's importance. Joey points out that Shane Douglas is going solo tonight. Takes his usual shots at Sensational Sherry for bailing out. Shane Douglas misses a crossbody block. Scorpio comes back with a tombstone. Scorpio goes up but comes up empty on a moonsault. Shane hits a belly-to-belly for the win and the NWA world title. Very solid match. No frills, no bullshit. Straightforward, well done, well executed. Never accelerated to something special. And stands alone just fine as a culmination of a long night of wrestling, though. Like, you got to remember, these guys did have other matches. This is a fine way to cap it off. Shane's a good choice to win the belt. He keeps ECW in the forefront, but also is a made man in the NWA. He's probably the most legitimate choice they had at this point as well, as far as a guy who could talk and travel and be a champion. We'll see if that comes to fruition. Made a lot of sense. Beating Scorpio clean builds his cred. So, Johnny, I went 3.25. Talk just about the match, then we'll get to the post-match.
Yeah, 3 stars. And Joey, once again, was a star in this match. He really put over the importance of the NWA title. And just very solid between these two, back and forth. Nonstop.
I agree. I went 3 stars on it, too. Little boring, but in a vacuum, we didn't get to see the whole show. So in a vacuum, you have to consider that they both had previous matches, mm-hmm. and they're probably tired at this point. But for me watching it today, it was there were some holds there and it got a little bit repetitive at times, but still a really good, like you said, no frills match.
Right, and I think it portrayed the style, in theory, of the NWA that they're trying to project, right? Just old-school, mat-based wrestling, no bullshit. Mm-hmm. And they go out and do it well. And Shane Douglas is your NWA World Heavyweight Champion. But things don't end there, because Douglas takes the belt. Scorpio congratulates Shane, says he'll be on his ass for a title shot. Shane then grabs the mic and says he won't hide. Scorpio's a great wrestler. And then he settles in for his now iconic, all-time legendary speech. In front of God and his father, he said he would be world champion, and he stands in the tradition of Lou Thesz, Briscoe, Dory Funk, Terry Funk, Buddy Rogers, Harley Race, Barry Windham, Ric Flair, Von Erich, the Fat Man, Dusty Rhodes. He's going to put Fat Man in there. He accepts his title. And then he pauses, says, "This is it tonight, Dad." Looks at the belt, says, "It's beautiful." Hangs his head and says, "All those legends can kiss his ass." Shane spikes the belt down, says he doesn't accept the torch being handed down from an organization that died 7 years ago. Shane ignites a new flame of the sport of professional wrestling, grabs the ECW title, and before God and his father's witnesses, declares himself the new ECW heavyweight champion of the world, says they will change pro wrestling. Tonight, the new era begins, the new era of the sport of professional wrestling, the era of the franchise, the era of the ECW. The crowd is all fired up. They hit up a loud ECW chant. Scorpio shakes his hand. Joey says, "History has been made. An altar. The NWA is dead. Long live ECW and its new world champion." Iconic promo that Shane crushed. Coming off a long night of action, he just nailed this. Kicking off the rebirth of ECW and is the official death knell, really, for all intents and purposes, of the NWA until more modern times. But they go dormant for a while. They're out there. They're champions, and they crown a new champion pretty quickly after this. But for all intents and purposes, they're a non-entity in the wrestling world. We got more to come, but let's just talk about Shane's promo, Jenny. What'd you think? I mean, had you ever seen this or heard of this?
I think it's in our open.
Correct. That one
for the show.
And yeah. Ricky Steamboat.
Yeah.
Everybody throws him in at the end of the list, but go ahead. What'd you think?
But yeah, this is like the big fuck you, you know, mm-hmm. like all the name dropping that he's been doing. And, you know, as he's doing the speech, I really bought into him being sincere. Mm-hmm. Like, it looked like he was overcome with emotion and blah, blah. I'm like, okay, it's fine, whatever. He's trying to have his moment. And then when he spikes the belt, I'm like, yeah, this is better. This is out of nowhere. Like, finally, he's saying all those other dudes can kiss his ass. I'm like, yes, this is what I've been waiting for. Thank you. You finally did it. I was stoked. It's an all-timer. It was captivating, amazing, wonderful. I love to see it. I'm on the Shane train now.
it's so good. I mean, it's a legendary just middle finger to the NWA and tradition, and it's everything they've been building toward as this counterculture underground, what they're trying to make this promotion into. This was such a necessary step, and the poor NWA. I guess we'll get to that. Johnny, what do you think of the promo?
Oh, it's amazing. It's another one of those moments where, just like with Dreamer, we get two of those, you know, those top moments that define ECW. This is the promo, and he's got the crowd in the palm of his hands, and mm-hmm. and they're just eating it up there with the ECW chants, and Flair is dead, and they can all kiss my ass. Just one of those moments.
Dennis Coraluzzo, poor Denny, dodging the press backstage. He says he has to talk to the board members. This is an absolute disgrace. Shane Douglas is champion, but he threw the belt down, and ECW is under NWA jurisdiction, but they made a strip both belts from him. He hopes to have things resolved tonight. Joey Styles is in the back. He resets us. Todd Gordon comes in, takes a shit on Coraluzzo at his decree about jurisdiction. He says, as of noon today, NWA Eastern Championship Wrestling has been folded and no longer exists. In its place, independent of the NWA, is ECW Extreme Championship Wrestling. They recognize Douglas as the World Heavyweight Champion of ECW and encourage wrestlers from anywhere around the world to come here to challenge Douglas for their new world title. Public Enemy's backstage. They spray paint Extreme over Eastern on a giant banner and say they may have been hardcore before, but now they'll take things to the extreme. And that closes out this all-time historical episode. So, John, what did you think of everything after the Douglas promo?
Oh, with the that's just the icing on the cake with the mm-hmm. with the Public Enemy spray painting Extreme and
poor Dennis Coraluzzo. He looks so haggard. He's like, you wanted anything to do with this right now?
Yeah, Todd Gordon got one over on him.
Yeah, they really, they really worked him. Go ahead, Jenny.
I was wondering when the Extreme, title mm-hmm. would make its way into instead of Eastern. So I popped hard for that. So it was great. And Public Enemy just, they did the perfect thing with the spray paint. And it took forever, though.
Yeah,
he was very meticulous with his spray painting.
Well, I think that stays. Like, they keep it like that for, with that spray paint over it.
Really?
Well, I think there's a really good way to end the initial run, the Eastern Championship Wrestling. You can see the direction they've been building toward with this more hardcore, violent style. And, the switch to Extreme was a brilliant one. It was executed very brilliantly as well. the way they did it with, you know, coming to this agreement that they wanted to pull away from the NWA, but they wanted to use it first before they did to get themselves over. Mm-hmm. And also to legitimize their title, right? They wanted to legitimize Shane Douglas, in theory, as a world champion. So by having him win the NWA title, they could then claim that the ECW champion and title is a world title. Because at this point, we had the WF world title, the WCW world title, you know, in North America, of course, with Japan and Mexico and whatnot. But those are really the two world titles. And then NWA, which was still out there. So they used that to springboard themselves in name to having a world title. And then they'll let Shane Douglas now be able to talk about being a world champion. So basically, they had been pissed at Cora Luzzo. They wanted to break away and build themselves up on their own. They approached Shane Douglas, who was already planned to win the tournament, and he agreed to the plan to be part of this. Cora Luzzo obviously was not very happy. The NWA, you know, they all break up part. NWA moves on, does their own thing from here. Never quite the same, at least until modern times when they've rebirthed with the whole power and all this stuff going on. They would name a new champion with another tournament in Cherry Hill, New Jersey on November 19th, where Chris Candido defeats Terry Smothers to win the title. And then Dan Severn defeats him in February 95. He would hold it for 4 years as NWA championship. So that title would bounce around for a while before it becomes part of TNA's legacy and then on from there. So at this point, it's pretty dormant from here on out for the next, you know, almost a decade. But Shane Douglas is now the ECW Extreme Championship Wrestling Heavyweight Champion, World Heavyweight Champion. ECW no longer with the NWA, completely on their own as a top promotion, no longer an affiliate with them. So this is all brilliant stuff, really well executed. I can only imagine it in the moment, like watching this unfold must have been incredible, especially if you were a diehard ECW fan, and they picked no better way to do it. It was a masterful performance by these guys to get this done. Any final thoughts from either of you on this whole thing?
No, you said it just right.
Just that, now it's in the last 3 weeks. We've seen three of those moments with the share spot, the Dreamer beating, and this. This is the three of the top moments that shaped ECW.
Really? Yeah. I mean, you're right. And it's like the iconic moments are just pouring in at this point. This is stuff that we see on the DVDs and that they'll push on their tapes. And when I say DVDs, I mean like the retrospective DVDs that came out later. These were always the moments highlighted as keystone moments in ECW history. All right. Best match. I went with Douglas Scorpio.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Worst match. 911 Doink.
Yeah.
Clown show.
Best moment. I went 911 Murdering Doink. Sandman lashing Tommy, and the Douglas speech and crowning of ECW.
Definitely, yes.
Yeah, they could all kiss my ass.
And Rick Steamboat. It's like you had to get him in there. Most 90s, I went with Doink. He was about as 90s as it gets.
I went with that banner with the like glitter letters. It looked like somebody's science fair project from 1993.
Yeah, Doink.
Stock Rising, 911, Tommy Dreamer, and of course Shane Douglas.
Of course.
Shane and Dreamer, yeah.
And Stock Falling, I went poor Doink. I went with the NWA, whose stock crashed hard, and Dennis Coraluzzo.
Dennis Coraluzzo, yeah.
Coraluzzo. He looked like Richard Nixon getting on that fucking plane. Just anywhere but there he wanted to be.
All sweaty.
Just anywhere. Not want to be there. Like poor David Wallace getting fired from Dunder Mifflin. Trying to get out. All right, final grade. I mean, what more can you say? It's a legendary ECW episode. Was it perfect? No, there were some down spots. But from the title final on, was really well done. And I think they highlight the Doink stuff for a reason, as we'll see. So I went 8 out of 10. I mean, this was I thought just a top-notch episode of TV for this promotion, especially given that it skyrockets them now from here.
I went just a tick lower at 7.5.
8 with Shane and Dreamer. It's a definite 8.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I mean, mainly just because of the importance. It's arguably the most important episode they'll do. There's great stuff still to come. I mean, this isn't their peak by any means. But it's without this episode, I don't know if they get what they get. You know what I mean? It's such a big occurrence. So, all right. That'll do it. That was a great episode to talk about. I really enjoyed watching it. I don't think I'd ever really sat and watched that whole episode of TV. I've obviously seen the Douglas promo a million times. But I never actually sat and watched how it all evolved with all the stuff post and that too. So it's worth the watch for anyone who's got the network and wants to check it out if you haven't seen it.
That yeah, said, I never realized the two of them were together. That it was on the same episode with
the Dreamer getting caned.
Yeah.
And so that was what, from the night before this? Because that wasn't at the title tournament, I don't think, the Dreamer Sandman match. That must have been the night before.
Yeah, it was.
Okay. All right, we'll be back in 2 weeks from tonight with four episodes of TV. So we'll have the fallout from this, and we have 8 weeks of television to build to November to remember. There is a big show in there that we don't get to see, but basically we have eight episodes of hardcore television to get us to the next big show, November to remember. So next week, 2 weeks time, we'll cover pretty much September. Jenny, what else do you have going on?
I should have an episode of Talking Pop coming up soon on the Jenny Position. We will have an episode of The Journey Through Infinity. And you can check out my Christmas episode. It is Freak Out Drive-In. We watched Black Christmas from 1974. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jenny Position and on Facebook at The Jenny Position. Leave a review, tweet me, whatevs.
Johnny?
All right. The playoffs continue this week in the NFL. The Cowboy will be back last week. Appreciate it. We had a very special fill-in.
We had a two-way dance. Just me and you. a lover's mix, as some may say.
It was hot.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun talking. I think we did okay with our. I mean, we hedged a bunch, but I think we did okay with our predictions, Johnny. Because
a week like yesterday, 2-2 is very well.
Yeah, and we gave reasons why the other ones could go the other way, right? We talked about Derrick Henry running on the pads and stuff. So I think we did okay with that preview. So we talked a lot about the coaching carousel as well. Of course, big Mike McCarthy will now be the coach in Dallas. We'll see how that goes. The Jay Hinchy doppelganger will be coaching down in the Big D. And lots of other stuff on that show, so check it out. And like Johnny said, the Cowboy will be back to preview the divisional round this coming weekend. For me, I mentioned No Holds Barred. We'll be back in January as well. We have our new gimmick a-coming. You'll hear all about that toward the end of the month. Be back on Monday with a new Place to Be podcast. Myself, Scott, and John look at WrestleMania 6, and rumors are swirling of a new Wrestling Warzone coming as well. We'll be looking at the Nitro from the fallout of Super Brawl. It's only a Nitro week because Raw was with the dog show. So we get that coming, and a brand new Body Press Your Luck will be coming in a couple weeks as well, episode 3. So lots coming on for me. All right, let's wrap things up. It was a fun episode. A lot of extreme talk, a lot of extreme action, a lot of extreme fun. For Jenny, for John, I'm JT. We're out. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks' time. Stay extreme.
That one night.